to the Trees and Nylon podcast. I'm your host, Trees and Nylon. You can call me Trees. And I'm joined today by the spandex sultan and the Shiba Inu enthusiast himself. It is Charlie. I want to pronounce your last name wrong, but I believe it's Duong.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. You were saying... You struck my ego a little bit before the pod, saying that you've been a listener for a while. So I'm happy to bless the fans whenever I can, you know.
Yeah, man. No, like we were saying, I don't remember when I came across the pod, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think I discovered it just when, you know, the Netherlands was like in strict lockdown and there wasn't really any out or even the ability to go outside. Yeah. So no, it was just great to kind of listen to how other people were experiencing the outdoors in a time where I wasn't, or I was, but a lonely.
Yeah. Nice. How many, not to reminisce too much on the pandemic, but how many lockdowns did Amsterdam have?
From what I
live, but
no, it's all good, man. I mean, I think it was, from what I remember, there was like two really big lockdowns. So like the Netherlands was like the last to adopt any sort of lockdown policies and then the first to quit. But they were like pretty, they were pretty harsh because it would be locked down and then opened up again and then locked down. And people were just, there was even a moment where like you couldn't be outside unless you were walking a dog.
Really?
Or you needed to be outside for a certain reason or they would start ticketing. So there was this like curfew time and Amsterdam, like everyone bikes, right? So everyone's biking home and there's this like strict curfew. And when it happens, there's just police like on the street, just handing out like 100 euro tickets. Just like, and everyone's just like sprinting or like running away from
as quick as possible.
Yeah. And there's all these like funny memes of people or like pretending to like throw the trash away, or like just holding trash bags with things so they can be outside or dog sitting, like, you know, so they could be outside. But yeah, dark times.
I remember Kian from All Terrain in. UK. He was talking to me about kind of like evading the police, trying to just go to a hike in whatever national park he was going to, but like having to go like certain hours and having to like run away and just trying to evade the law to be outside, which is kind of crazy, honestly. Because I was in America, that was like the place that the CDC said was the only place you can go, was you can only go like on hikes and stuff. And so we had a huge skyrocket in national park and state park. Participation during that time because it was like the only place that you could really go, and all of the gift shops are closed obviously, but the outdoors wasn't inaccessible.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are so many different approaches for that, right? Like for example, you could be outside hiking together, but like you couldn't golf together, or like I don't know, just like these, right? Or like you could picnic outside with a bunch of people, but you couldn't eat on the terrace with the same amount of people. It's weird, you know, like there's all these sort of things that would kind of contradict each other, but
whatever.
It's the past now.
It's over, man.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah, exactly.
About that anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. Hopefully not. But
and speaking of the past, that is one of the topics we'll be talking about today on the Trees and Nylon, steering us back onto the train tracks of this this show. For anyone who's new here, we're going to be talking about trees, that being the outdoors, and nylon being clothing, moving through past, present, future, and I'm going to be asking Charlie all these questions about him. What do you want to start with, trees or nylon?
Let's do trees, man.
All right, sounds good. So yeah, tell me about growing up, going outside, enjoying nature. You've moved around a bit, it seems, so you might have a varied experience.
I think the first the first memories that I had just being outside was really, for example, just being like outside in, so I grew up in suburban America, like in Northern Virginia. And if you know about that area, like the DMV, the surrounding areas of DC, you know, I grew up in a very suburban community, like suburban kind of area, which is probably cookie cutter for most like suburban areas around like major cities. But I just really remembered it being very green. Green as in like in those areas, it was very hilly. There was a lot of like kind of elevation like here and there. And every time we were in the car, you could see kind of like, depending on different areas where we were living, you could see the Shenandoah. So you could see but it's like really out in the distance, but you can see it. And I think that was really nice. And also where we were living was very like wooded area. So I was always either outside, like biking or playing with friends or being outside. But I think my maybe fondest memories was as a kid, my parents would always like to go kind of camping near the beach, near the Chesapeake Bay or down further. You know, in like Southern Virginia. And those were kind of my like initial memories. Like we would just go camping with my family. It would always be next to water. It would never be anywhere mountainous, but it would always be like along the coast. And my parents just really liked to be next to the water. So we did it very often as a child.
Nice. That is something that I've neglected to do is like beach camping. Me and my fiance have talked about it. Down by in Cumberland Island, where they have like the free range horses. Basically there's wild horses that live on the beach and you can just rent campsites and go kayaking and paddleboarding and explore like the swamps there. But it's always so booked. You have to book like 6 months in advance for it. It's pretty intense.
Oh yeah. I mean, I didn't know that there was also something like that as well. Like, so in Virginia, we also have like the Chincoteague and Assateague Island. And we also have like these horses that are like,
oh really?
They eat like sea kelp, and every year people gather to kind of see the horses like swim from one island to the other. But they're like, they have really short legs. Maybe they're the same way you're speaking. Like they have really short legs and they're bloated because they eat so much sea kelp.
I haven't heard. That's very interesting. No, I've just, all I know is that there are horses that live like on the beach, which is a very like romantic idea.
Yeah.
But I've never heard that. That's very cool. But the barrier islands are all over like the East Coast, I believe. Just like small barrier islands. Very cool. Interesting.
So
camping on the beach and exploring like the suburb area. Were you into any like outdoor sports as a kid, or was it kind of just casual?
I think my parents like let me play like almost every sport like under the sun. Wow. Like I played, like I ran like track and field. I played, nice. I played football and soccer and also basketball, but I never really excelled in any of them really.
Mm-hmm. Jack of all trades, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, trying stuff out. And then like, for example, you play basketball and then you just like, I really like the sport, but at the same time, I'm just not very good at it. And like, I also played soccer like every other American kid, like growing up, and played it for a couple of seasons, but it was okay. And nothing ever really stuck. Maybe track and field stuck a little bit. Like in high school, I really enjoyed like running hurdles. So that was something I actually did for like a couple of the seasons, which was actually really nice. But like maybe another thing, like growing up, I also practiced like a lot of martial arts. It's something that actually stuck with me. I did like a Korean style of jujitsu. It's called Hapkido. And I did it for like a really long time, like almost like when I was a preteen all the way until I graduated like university. I did it, you know, for an extensive amount of time.
Wow.
And even through that, I also connected with nature. Like we would, as like an entire school would go together and we would hike. Like one of my favorite things was like hiking like Old Rag Mountain in the Shenandoah. Like I really liked going to the Shenandoah, and we would be there with friends or with our instructors. I would also have like my sister and my parents would come along, and we would always spend a lot of time there. And it's something that I even did like in high school, and also when I was older in university, I would go always to the Shenandoah just because it was like an hour to like an hour and a half away, depending on what part of the mountain you want to be at. But yeah, man. So like I played a lot of sports, but like the only thing that really stuck as like a young age was like doing martial arts.
Nice. And so I am picturing in my head, like jujitsu without the like ice bath, Black Rifle Coffee, Punisher logo type people there. Is that kind of the vibe? Is it's a bit less, I need to prove my masculinity jujitsu?
Yeah, I think that might be the reason why I didn't excel in most things, because I didn't want to just like kind of fight the, like, to have to prove my masculinity, if that makes sense. Like, it's like just like an ego battle all the time. And I really liked martial arts and doing Hapkido because it was really centered around like yourself, right? It's like you're not really battling anybody. You're just, you would do sparring. There's obviously like grappling and certain moves that are similar to judo. So it's like understanding one's body and how you use it. And then also like in sparring, like understanding the motions of another person's body and how you can kind of, it's like a chess match, but you're kind of understanding kind of like the human body and the human experience at the same time. And every day it's kind of probably people who work, let's say like in the restaurant industry or, you know, these kind of like hard grinds where, you know, if you aren't as good today, you can always improve the next day. And I kind of really like that, even in basketball or things, but I really like that about martial arts. It was like centered around sharpening a skill or discipline or just doing something over and over again, consistency. I really like.
I think that I would say as a soccer player my whole life, there is that in team sports as well, but like the best work you do is alone as well. Kind of like you're saying, it's all about like how you're identifying and how you're progressing as on your own. I would say the best work that I ever did, obviously with soccer, was training by myself, like against a wall or at home or whatever it was, and honing myself away from like normal practice with the team. So similar aspects there for sure.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it's one of, even if it's a team sport, it almost always starts with you. Like, you have to help yourself before you can help others, you know? So it's like, I find like that sort of, sport is something that I carry into myself, now that I'm at the age that I'm at, you know, I started picking up like cycling and also running.
For 85, you look really good. I just want to put that.
Yeah,
out there.
Thanks, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Turning 86 tomorrow, you know.
Wow, that's awesome, dude. You look. Yeah, you just look. Yeah, I can't even put into words.
Yeah,
beautiful
man.
Skin.
Thanks. Yeah, Asian don't raisin.
True.
Yeah.
So when did hiking and true outdoorsmanship come into your life?
I think it's really like a recent thing, honestly. Like, it's not, it's something that I'd always did. Like, even for example, I would go camping with my friends and we would do hikes in the Shenandoah. And I also, even most of my upbringing, I either lived, as a child with my parents in the suburbs. And then when I got older, I moved to the beach where I went to university, but then I also then lived in more urban areas. But I always find like the escape is really nice. It's like, you can't just always be in this like metropolis. Like, I always really valued getting away, whether it's hiking, camping. But I think more recently I've been connecting with it a bit more just because of like the phase in my life. I think I also, I had quite a long career already. And I'm also at a point where, I don't know. I think I value other things. Like, instead of when I was much younger, I really valued, and I always thought like, I'm like, the city is like where I want to be and it's where things are happening. And I think I still have that aspect of me, but I think more than ever, I try to prioritize getting out a bit more instead of thinking that it's something that I need to actively do while I live in the city. It's more that I try to integrate that into my life more in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Awesome. And how often are you getting out these days as you're trying to integrate it more, whether you're hiking or biking or just being out of the city, basically?
So I picked up cycling actually more. Well, let's say I picked up cycling when I moved to the Netherlands. Like, just
necessity,
because.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a way of life here, you know. It's just a way of life. Like, I think in Amsterdam, it's like every person on average, they have like two to three bikes, and I have two to three bikes, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. It was just like I cycled and I biked as a child and also mm-hmm. growing up, but it was more like recreational. Like it's not like a means of transportation, and I would do it more recreational. But I started cycling more heavily, like when I started to move here, just because I used it for everything, like going to work, picking up groceries. If we would go to eat at a restaurant, just like almost like the bike would be the thing that we would take all the time. And then yeah. I started to be on the bike more often. And then I realized like where I'm living, there's like a bike lane that connects like almost the entire country. Like wow. you can bike the entire Netherlands almost anywhere, and there is a connected bike network everywhere, and it's all safe. That's to be awesome. On the bike. Yeah. And so what I started to do, like on my more, I guess here they call it the Oma feet, like the grandma bike, is like, I was just taking it everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like we would bike for hours on a really nice day somewhere, and we would get pancakes or, you know, me and my partner, we would bike super far and maybe go to like a fisher town and get like some fish. But I started picking up cycling when the pandemic happened. Like I said, there was so little to do, and I just mm-hmm. wanted to be outside.
Right.
And I really wanted to pick up like actively kind of doing cycling. And it's been something that I've done for almost 3 years now, and it's still something I pick up today. And now that the weather is getting nice, I'm just going out almost like a couple times a week, like 3 to 4 times a week.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And how is this might be a extremely Georgian problem. How's the pollen during spring?
Honestly, actually it's interesting. Like I never had problems with allergies when I was living on the East Coast. And, you know, I grew up in Virginia then I lived in like the DMV I never really had like that issue, but when I moved here, there's something happening really? Where like I have no like, yeah, it's like, I'm just not used to it or some sort of pollen, but, mm-hmm. yeah, it's been pretty bad in the last couple of years. But knock on wood, like it hasn't happened yet.
You finally adapted.
Maybe I adapted, but the pollen's not too bad. Do you have like really big allergies? Yeah.
I don't have big, well, it depends on the year, honestly, kind of like what you were saying. I had bad sinus allergies as a kid when I was here. And, I had a, it, it, yeah, it depends on the year. I've been doing this thing where I eat local honey. Like leading up to spring. So I'll go to like a farmer's market, get some honey from some local place and just have like a spoonful of that. Cause you're introducing the pollen to your body now so that I can adapt to it basically. And I feel like it works cause I didn't get sick last year. I didn't get sick this year from the pollen. And in Atlanta, it's just like a blanket of pollen. It's crazy. Mike, I have a gray car and it rained. And then right after the rain, you go look at your car and it's already got like yellow on it again. It's just insane. It's like you could, when you drive, instead of a dust cloud, you have a pollen cloud behind you.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
I forgot that was something that would happen on the East Coast. That's a memory. Yeah. You just unlocked like a memory. I forgot uh-huh. that was it. Yeah. I remember like seeing it all over, like yellow spots all over the car, and you wipe your finger and it would just, it would just be like dust.
Dust. Yeah. Pure pollen. Yeah. That's something that I'm dealing with. So I limit my walks to like nighttime now with my dog out of necessity of that's when I'm here. And then also because that's when the pollen's less active. Apparently it's when the trees are producing less. Walk at night.
Yeah. You got the pollen game on lock, man.
I have to know as someone who at least had allergies before. Oh, and a neti pot. Have you ever neti potted before?
Oh dude, that is when I discovered that the neti pot is insane. Like, it's so good.
My mom put me on. She has like a level 2 or 3 neti pot where it's like a bottle, a squeeze bottle that you like actually squeeze instead of like tilting your head. That one's crazy. But yeah, that's always a lifesaver if I do come down with some sort of pollen-based illness.
Oh dude, nice tip with the honey. I didn't know that was a thing, but it makes so much sense. That's that would help. Yeah. Like maybe I'll try it here just to be preventative. Yeah.
And if you can figure out what plant it is that's different, that's causing you this sinus problem, then you could specifically look for pollen made or honey made with that pollen. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Okay.
You potentially. Right,
I'm gonna make a note of this actually. This is very helpful. Okay.
Yeah, cool. There you go.
Nice,
just
man.
A spoonful in your tea or in the morning before work or whatever.
Yeah, perfect.
That's what I like to do. But anyway, we've talked about the past. We're talking about the present. Let's talk about the future. Future of going outside. You got any bucket list places or hikes or bikes, maybe? I don't know. You're big into cycling. Mm.
So I just got back from Japan like a couple of weeks ago, actually. So I was there. Yeah, thanks. And on my first trip last year, I met some trail runners I was just asking them like, hey, you live in Tokyo. I mean, the city is massive. Like, how do you get out into nature? Yeah. And almost every single person either said that they would either go down to the beach in Kamakura or they would go to Mount Takao, which is also like the mountain that's like the closest to Tokyo. And it has like, you know, like everyone loves Mount Takao, even the tourists. And but I didn't get a chance to do it last year. And this year we went like in January I think that was some place. Like I always wanted to hike in Japan, and I know that there's other mountains that are way crazier, but this one was just like, it was just breathtaking to see just the mountain culture, or just the like how the mountain athletes and the people really experience the mountain, their kind of the respect for the mountain. It was just really beautiful to see. So one of my bucket lists for sure is to, I would love to, just kind of hike around kind of the Mount Fuji area. And there's tons of different trails there, and maybe even get a camper or kind of a car with like a rooftop tent. And that's a bucket list for sure for myself that I would like to do. And then on the bike, I would love to one day kind of do Unbound in Kansas, the gravel race, which
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's kind of like the pinnacle now. I'm not going to go to compete. I would just love to like ride the course. Mm-hmm. And it's become like kind of a part of the kind of like the peak gravel racing kind of the race. It's kind of the race now for American gravel. But that course looks insane. Like I would love to cycle that. And I got a taste of it last year, actually. My buddy and I, we did the Rift in Iceland. And actually like 60% of the racers were all American. and we did the Rift, and that was like absolutely mind blowing. It was like the hardest and craziest terrain that I've ever ridden.
Wow. You see any lava while you were there?
Actually the volcano actually erupted right close to Reykjavik. I think it was a week before the race happened last summer, and we didn't see it. We just heard about it, and it was all over the television. But when we were actually done with the race and we were driving to the really early in the morning to back to the airport, everything, like, have you been to Iceland before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. When you land, like, I don't know. I tried to explain it to my family and also to my friends. It's like, I've never experienced any sort of landscape like this before. I think if you're from the UK, you're probably familiar with it. But like, for me, I never landed anywhere that had almost like no trees.
Yeah. Okay.
Like it was insane to me. Like you would land in Reykjavik and it's just like moss and kind of like lava rocks.
Yeah.
And then like, it's like that for miles and miles and miles. And if you would get into the city, there would be like trees that they would plant, but there was just like no greenery. So when we were driving back to the airport towards the end, it was just like fog, all gray and blue. And then it's just like this beam of like red light from the ground to the sky. And I was like, what is that? And it was the volcano.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've commented on the treeless rolling hills of England a few times. And I've also played Death Stranding, which is what Iceland is what it's based off of. I'm gonna say it's what Iceland is based off of. That's incorrect.
That's an amazing game, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Kojima is an artist, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, man. Oh man, that game. I still haven't played it. I just don't. I don't have a PlayStation, but it's on my it's on my list.
It's on the list. Yeah, no. It's an experience. It got a lot of flack for being kind of just a walking simulator, but if you think of it more as like an interactive movie, I think there's like an hour and 45 minutes or something of cutscenes in that game.
Really? So you're just okay.
You're like okay. You go to destinations and there is gameplay, but like it's all about the cutscenes basically. And I don't know why he doesn't just make movies, which I think he is making a movie, but he prefers games over movies. It's like the interactiveness of it makes you more attached to what's happening, I guess.
I respect that, honestly. I think I think there's something about actually living it, and then the mechanics of actually the mechanics of like moving in this world, and there's some interesting kind of interactions that
definitely.
Yeah, cool, definitely. Man. Yeah, that's on the list.
Yeah, I played Red Dead Redemption 2. Shout out to Andrew Richards. That game was probably the best narrative of any piece of media I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, whoa, just amazing. And I think it was aided by the video game aspect of it. No spoilers, obviously, but it was very moving. I cried at the end. But anyway, let's get on to, we talked about hiking Japan, obviously. I mean, who doesn't want to do that? Let's move on to the nylon section. Let's talk about getting some fits off, shall we?
Let's do it.
So growing up, pre where you are right now in your fashion journey, what were you into? What was old little Charlie wearing?
As a person that like, you know, grew up in the DMV, like, I don't know, I was also like
the style going around there, right?
No, not too much, but I don't know, I think I till this day I still consider myself like a child of the internet, right? Like it's one of those things where my first, like, my first time interfacing or my interest really was, I really liked just basketball culture. And I mean, I grew up in kind of the era when, like, Michael Jordan, kind of before his retirement, and he played at the Wizards, and also like loving Allen Iverson, him also coming from Virginia, and just like kind of basketball culture in itself, and playing NBA Street. I was also highly influenced by like music. I really loved just, I don't know, like the just like hip hop and also R&B, and also, yeah, I don't know. I really loved the Neptunes. It's just like, I loved the Neptunes, like NERD, just everything that was like coming out of Virginia at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really was my inspiration or my kind of like style book. But personally for myself, like one of the things is when I was in middle school and also in high school, I loved like collecting like Nike SBs. That was just my thing. And I really liked it because of the actual aspect of, like, I was so intrigued as like such a young person that like one single like product or a shoe could kind of like encapsulate an idea or like a brand or a personality in some sense. Like, how can an inanimate object, like, you could wear something that would, I guess, like show what creed or what clan or what group that you are a part of or your interests in some ways. Like if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of like my first thoughts of that, like my first kind of like understanding of style and clothing and fashion.
You're a streetwear kid growing up. Old school streetwear kid, it seems.
Yeah, like being on Nike Talk, like, you know, like being on Nike Talk and like
OG right there.
Yeah, like being on Nike Talk and then also like meeting up with I really liked to go to for example, like, you know, you would meet people on these forums and then you would either do like sneaker trades with them, like at the mall or something, right? It's very suburban, like, you know, and then one of my favorite places actually, like where I grew up, was this place called like Elite Board Shop. And they would always get the first sort of Nike SB drops. And there would always be kind of like these lines that would kind of form outside of this shop. And yeah, no, there was something really just nice about it. It wasn't really just hype culture. It was just a bunch of people in my city that would really be into this type of stuff. Like people that liked streetwear, they would really like music, but then at the same time, you know, love basketball and skating as well. So yeah, I don't know. That was kind of me as a kid. Yeah.
Cool. Before Complex Poison the Well with their Supreme line interviews and all that.
Yeah, it was before that, and also it was just being like a fan, if that makes sense, like just fandom, like for example, you know, just seeing, for example, as a kid, like I think the first time I saw like the Staple Dunk, for example, and just being like, oh, it's interesting, like it kind of shows like New York culture, and also Jeff as a person, like kind of putting his DNA into a shoe. And I think it's still happening to this day, but I think back then there was something so beautiful about it, is that like some sort of this object could then, with colors and materials, could then kind of communicate your brand in some sort of way. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Do you remember your most coveted SB Dunk that you got?
So I had the Tiffany's.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it.
Yeah, but like never wore them. I just had them.
Of course not. Yeah, you just had them. Why would you wear those?
Yeah, and then I sold them, right? Like I sold them, but that would be something that would be like, let's say, something that I was, if you asked me back then, I was like, yeah, this is like really cool and I really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the culture, you know?
Yeah, but nowadays, like I think about it, and it's like, yeah, it was really cool, but almost like, why did I buy that?
It's how you were, man. I mean, I think back on my, my like early Supreme days, when I didn't really know like how to buy things or how to resell, and I was just happy to get anything off the website and then like lose $20 by selling it on StockX. I look back and I there was a learning opportunity. It was just something that I don't look back not fondly about it, even though I was buying like these terrible Nike Supreme hats and stuff that just wouldn't sell. It was like, it was getting into the culture, you know?
Yeah.
Now the fits I was wearing, that's a different story. But the actual resale pieces I was buying I'm not too disappointed in that.
Were you like Supreme like head to toe, or like
it was just like, it was just a sign of the times. I was wearing like the pinroll jeans and the ultra boots and like the flannel, kind of like Fear God type stuff.
Okay.
Or was like a classic fit back in the day. I had this really bright orange hoodie, and I wore this whenever it was like Halloween time, when it was fall, I'd wear this bright, like high vis orange hoodie with black pants and the off-white Nike Converse, the second round where they have like the orange sole. Which I got a lot of compliments on. People who don't care about hype stuff would be like, those are really cool shoes. But that was like the go-to, you know, you match like the top with the shoes and you have like the neutral pants. Yeah, I was doing that a lot. And I don't look back on that too fondly. It was a bit corny, but you know, you got to start somewhere. So
yeah. Yeah, man. No, I'm with you. I mean, I'm even thinking back to myself, like when I was in middle school, man, like I don't know if you did this, but like in middle school, at least for me, like it was the era where like let's say like Lil Wayne, like G Unit, 50 Cent, like
yeah,
all of these sorts of things. And there was like even an era for me where I was wearing like Air Force Ones with like really baggy jeans, but like to not have the jean rub off on the shoe, you would then put a rubber band and then kind of like cuff them up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. With like a extremely long, like tall tee.
That's, of course. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but I honestly think that's cooler than the counterpart of it in like the 2010s where people were in like the, oh man, what's the word for it? Not layered denim. There's a word for it where it's long, but they like.
You mean like with anyway. Like the heavy stacks?
Stacks. That's what it's called. Stacked denim. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the Fear of God, like stack where it was like super tight, but still stacked at the shoes. And then they'd wear like the butt wipe tees. You know what I'm talking about? Like the really high sleeves and the butt wipe, like the LA dude fashion. I'm glad we're out of that. I never like, even when I was a boy, I was like, this is whack. I'm going to wear that.
Yeah. I still see like kind of remnants of it. It's kind of like the t-shirt like scoops down a bit. Like,
yeah,
the hems like on the front and the back would scoop and then they would be kind of like cinched up like on the sides. Yeah.
Yeah. We call that the butt wipe tee. That's it's LA style, you know. You get one of those, you get on some skinny jeans with some Chelsea boots. That's a fit right there. It kind of look like Future, but like in a not cool way.
Oh, actually, like I was just talking about this exact thing that we're talking about right now. So in the Netherlands, like the Dutch are really functional, right? So it's not really for fashion. It's just like a Dutch male wears this exact thing that we're talking about, like really skinny jeans, like ankles are showing, white shoes with kind of this, what do you call it, like a butt wipe tee?
I call it a butt wipe. You can call it a scoop though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And but they wear it, but it's not really it's like purely function, like it's straight function, like, and you see it very often actually.
And yeah, that's the difference, is the LA guys do it because they think it looks cool.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah.
And they're just like, you know, 4 years behind on the times.
Hey,
more
I think
than four, like six.
I think we saw Kanye wear it some things, and that really changed the trajectory of
No, it did. Listen, Kanye, we don't love what he's doing now, but back in the day, he like literally you see him wearing something and that means that it's cool now.
Yeah, like especially that era.
When he wore Ultra Boosts and he was wearing Fear of God and stuff, like that stuff became cool because of him. And then Yeezy, like the entire Yeezy like brand aesthetic of like baggy earth tone, that kind of thing. It just like took off in the late 2010s. And then he did some bad things and we don't like him anymore. But
hey, I haven't been back to the States, like, you know, like living there for quite some time, but there's still a subculture of individuals that still dress like that era, right? Like it's still very prominent, like kind of that look, like what you're saying, like those like super skinny jeans stacked in, like the denim is stacked. It's still something that's thriving. So crazy.
I think most of those guys, like all the trend riders who were like that, have kind of hopped off of that wave. And now they do like the whole Amelie Ondore thing with like the carpenter pants and the graphic tee.
Yeah, that's been having a moment for quite some time now. I think it's probably already like 3 to 4 years, but it's very interesting how it's changed so drastically, actually. It's actually quite drastic, and now that I kind of see it, it wasn't anything quite gradual. It just went from, skinny jeans to quite boxier type of looks. In like, it wasn't even that gradual. It just kind of happened.
It just happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also a sign of the Gorpcore influence as well. And I guess skating too, because skaters have always worn baggy stuff, but
yeah,
definitely. I think Gorpcore played its role in that with like very baggy silhouettes.
Yeah, man. Yeah. But yeah, man, like I think, you know, a lot of my inspiration for those things, like at a young age, was really from music and just like street culture and just being like a kid of the internet. And actually, like when I ended up going to university, I went to school in Norfolk, Virginia. Mm. So, yeah. And at that moment, I was also like, even being a kid from like Northern Virginia, like just being around something, actually it's only 3 hours away, but it's like it was completely different. Like people were dressing different, people were talking mm-hmm. different. It's just, you're in the same state, but completely it's almost culture.
yeah
it was like really the South. It was like my first kind of like the you know, I wouldn't even say like where I grew up feels like the South, because it was so close to DC.
but
this was like really the South, and like the and you would tell people that you would come from Northern Virginia and they would also maybe look at you a bit differently. It almost mm-hmm. didn't feel like it was the same place, even though we were from the same, same state.
Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, states are huge, bro. And also you think about like, yeah, people are going to have other cultures. I drive 45 minutes south and I'm in Atlanta, and that's an entirely different culture than what I was raised in and what I do now. It doesn't exist there. Like my fashion doesn't exist in Atlanta, you know. It's interesting
but there has to be, right? Because
what you're saying.
Being so close to like the Appalachian, there's got to be people uh-huh. that, or maybe the people that like to be to do the things that you like to do, or maybe it's more functional. Is that what you're...
Yeah. There's lots of people who go hiking and camping. Yeah. And my friends are some of those people, but no one really cares about clothing really in Atlanta. Like you've got people who... Yeah, I really don't think, not to be the guy that can't fit in, but I really don't think anyone's dressing like me in Atlanta, if I'm being honest. I'm thinking not. I don't know. That it's very just like designer focused, you know. The okay. Atlanta fashion is all about like wearing the most designer clothes, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. That makes some sense. Okay. Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, and also like my style has also changed quite a bit since, just because of I've moved around so much and now being in the Netherlands for quite some time, like it's also mm-hmm. changed quite a bit for myself as well. Like, I think when I go back home or I visit my family and friends, it's almost like the clothing that I'm wearing now is like really built upon like me just being in the outdoors where mm-hmm. I come from. Like people mainly spend most of their time indoors or in a car. Yeah. So it's like, it's almost yeah. like I'm like over-prepared if I think about it, but actually here it fits and works quite nicely because just the lifestyle in the Netherlands, like people are just outside. It doesn't matter whether or not it's raining or snowing or windy. Yeah. It's just like people are just outside.
I think I talked about this with Joy Howard as well, that car culture shapes kind of the fashion scene, that what's going to happen. Like that's why you see the best designs come from cities where they're more walkable for people, because they have more of a reason to get dressed and to look better and to have functional clothing on top of that as well. Cause like you just said, I sit inside, I drive my car to work, whatever it is. I don't have to really care about being cold for the 5 minute walk from my office or to my car and vice versa, you know? But if you're in a city like New York or Amsterdam, right? You do need the functionality of, I need to look good, but I also need to be comfortable and I need to be like warm or dry or whatever it may be. So.
Yeah. It's like, If you grow up in a place like that's mainly car dominant, like if you just take some place like Los Angeles, like and it rains quite literally like never, like maybe mm-hmm. once or twice a year, like you almost like don't need a jacket, nor do you need any, you just like hop in and out of the car. And then when you're out of the car, maybe you're inside of a building. So if it rains, yeah, you're just wet for like a second, really.
Yeah, exactly. No third places in America. They're not allowed. The car lobbyists will not have them.
Hey, that's kind of sad, eh?
It's super sad. I think about it a lot, about how I get a lot of reels about like places that have changed from like 4-lane highways to one train station with like communities built around where the lanes used to be. I get a lot of those. They do it in like Barcelona and then France. They've done it too. Just like before and after photos. And it makes me very sad. It makes me happy for them, but it makes me very sad for, we'll never get that here. And then I look at space. I'm like, this could just be like a train line and you could have so much more green space and like little businesses and grocery stores or whatever it may be. But instead you got to drive all this way to get anywhere.
Dude, don't even get me started on this. I could talk about this for like hours. Like, so my partner is Dutch, right? She's a born and raised Amsterdammer. So she is nice. Like, Amsterdam is like,
congratulations, just, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Of course. Yeah. And she's just used to this environment that she's in, right? So everyone mm-hmm. bikes, public transportation is very good, and you're kind of in this mix between, yeah, like I guess most people probably know or they don't know, but like Amsterdam is kind of like the kind of blueprint for what started kind of New York City, right? Before New York was called New York, was called New Amsterdam, and right. and kind of the and yeah, Amsterdam is this really melting pot of cultures, mm-hmm. not in the positive sense, because the Dutch were very they.
You can say racist. Yeah, they were. You can say racist. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Dutch culture is a touchy subject, right?
They're colonialism. Come on.
Yeah, man. So yeah. But at the same time, though, if you flip that on the positive side, it's like a mixing pot of so many different cultures, and mm-hmm. and I don't know. It's like whenever we go back to the States and we like visit my family and we go to Virginia, it's almost like you know like almost every city in America, whether or not it's like a small town, there's always these like old towns, right? Like, you know, you go somewhere, it's like old town this or old town Alexandria is right outside. Uh-huh. She goes around and she goes like, why doesn't this exist everywhere?
Yeah.
You know, why does it have to be considered like an old town where there's
you have
like
to drive and park somewhere to get to the walkable part of the city? Exactly.
Yeah, she also distance is like really interesting as well. And I only really observe this because I'm kind of watching her experience it. But like, I would never mm-hmm. think of it just because I'm an American. It's like American almost my parent. Yeah, my parents are like, yeah, get dressed. You know, we're gonna go out to have lunch, and it's like super close. And she's like, bet, super close. We're gonna walk, right? Mm-hmm. And super close for my dad is like 45 minutes in the car.
45 minutes of driving, 5 minutes of walking.
Yeah, and she's like, how is it 45 minutes in the car but like a 4-day walk?
It's like,
yeah
no, definitely that puts things into perspective. Like, I was thinking about, because I walk my dog down like the main street by my house, and just thinking about if I needed a grocery store, or I needed a place to eat or something, how close would it have to be for me to think it was reasonably close? And I could walk for like 30 minutes, probably 20 minutes, if it's for something to be considered close. But like, the nearest grocery store to me, which is the closest I've ever lived to a grocery store, is probably a 30-minute walk away, but there's no sidewalk to get there. There's no
That's
sidewalk.
Sad, man.
It is sad. It's very sad. There's a sidewalk for like half of it, but then there's no sidewalk for the other half.
Oh man, I think we need to do something about this. I don't know.
I think you and I do need to do something about this. I think it's going to take a lot of interesting tactics. It's the car. It's the car lobbyists. We have to like nuke America and restart with not cars in mind, but pedestrians and civilians in mind. Which America wasn't built on that, sadly.
Yeah, but like, I'm sure you've seen it like on social media. It's like all those people who show what, for example, like what some major city in Kentucky looked like in the 30s or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like way more connected than it is now, which is so sad. It's almost like it can't be that hard for us to have like a high speed rail, like on the East Coast. Like it's not that hard. Like even like second or third world countries like Vietnam have connected railways that are.
Yeah. We are the least developed, most developed country, you know?
Yeah.
Like the basic amenities that other countries have, because America was so anti anything with that even remotely resembles socialism, like let's give us a high speed rail. And that's not true for cities, for most big cities, it does exist, but like you can catch a train in England and be somewhere really close to a city center, not outside of like London or Manchester, whatever it is. Like there are trains that connect towns there. There's no trains that connect any towns. And I know the scale is bigger in America, but like if I could take a train from work to like if I could drive to a station and then that station takes me the rest of the 30 minutes I need to go to work, I would do it every day. Truly, I would do that every day. I do it every way on the way back. Like I would not care at all. And I just drive for 5 minutes or I bike for 5 minutes or whatever it may be. Like I'd much prefer that. And you know, if you can, if you want to drive, you can, whatever, take your car. You Americans have this like big boner for, they're not going to take my diesel car away. And it's not diesel ever, it's gas car away from me. Like whatever, man, no one's going to make you drive an electric car that's fully automated. That's just never going to happen. But at least give us the option if we really want to have like a train. I don't know. I could also talk about this for hours. Maybe you can come back on and we can do a full anti-car podcast.
We can call it cars and something else, but trees and cars or something. But yeah,
we'll workshop the name. We'll come up with something really, really eye catching.
No, but I have a really close group of friends, like my best friends, and they're also living abroad. Like it actually coincidentally happened. It's not that we got together and was like, let's all live abroad.
It, yeah, that's really cute.
Yeah. But I have a friend who lived in Poland and then another one that moved to Singapore, and we go back to the States like for the holidays, and it's almost like whoa, like it's almost, we were so used to this, and we almost, it's just like what you were saying, like a second tier city in the UK or even like a third tier city in the Netherlands is like more well connected with public transportation and walkability than like a major city in the United States. Like that's crazy.
It is.
Yeah, man. Well, don't get me started again.
I'm being honest. You come back on, we'll talk about it again. We can do a full hour on that.
Where were we? Yeah.
I think I'm going to hit you with the last question of the day, which is the future of clothing for you.
Yeah. The future of clothing. Yeah, this is an interesting topic because I for the last 3.5 years I've been working with a company called Badbora, which is a textile innovation company, and I started there to really help the company kind of digitally transform. And what I mean from that is, like, if you're familiar with the textile kind of industry. So textiles, like I don't want to just say fashion because textiles kind of spans more than fashion. But if you take fashion, automotive, anything that has like materials and fabric on it is the textile industry. It's like a extremely tactile and very craft and artisan kind of industry, manufacturing, right? Mm-hmm. And with that comes with like one of the most polluting industries in the world. And I can't say if it is number one or not, just because there's not enough data to support it. We just don't know the scale of it, right?
Yeah.
And there's just so much like crap, like just tons of overly designing, overly producing crap, right? And for me, like my outlook on the future of nylon or with clothing, right? This part is something that I've kind of dedicated my last like 3.5 years of working towards, is that I believe that there's like a change that needs to happen where designers and consumers and brands need to be more conscious in the things that they make. Mm-hmm. So what I've been doing at ByteBorda has been building, like, I've actually just left and I'm currently on a career break, but for the last 3.5 years that I built this platform, helped them build this platform called ByteBorda Create, that basically takes like the entire textile supply chain and mm-hmm. kind of flips it on its head and makes it like a super user-friendly way for designers to prototype and then prototype textiles, make better products, mm-hmm. and then kind of find a sustainable solution to scale their products. And it's all really centered around like digitally kind of transforming the textile industry because it's such a tactile industry, right? So everything's really like a tap on the shoulder, passing something to another person. So this idea about being able to actually design, manage, and scale a product from like the touch of your hand without having any sort of like industry experience. And during my time there, we did tons of prototypes and worked with many brands. And you know, I think some of the things that are live that you can see now, if you do a quick Google, is also with like Porter Bags or DMA Footwear. Also some things like with Rafa, and with Capital as well, was something that we worked on. I think the future is really how does the industry not get stuck in this kind of seasonality, right? Like, I was speaking with a friend who, for example, he goes to Paris Fashion Week, and almost every time that he goes, like imagine every 6 months you go, is there really much that changes? Mm-hmm. And it's like another brand doing another Gorkcore collection or another brand that is doing something that's related to tech wear or something inspired by the outdoors. And it's just more and more and more kind of just more things that people don't necessarily need. So I think the future of just fashion or also the textile industry is like how, like the responsibility of people that's kind of work or interact in this space to really think about like where are they putting their money? Do they actually need what they are purchasing? So it's like buying power. And then from a designer, it's like, are you making the best possible thing that you can make, versus having to make it because, you need to pay your bills because I think at the end of the day, like we almost don't need any more clothing. There's like a statistic out there that says like there's enough clothing on the planet, like on the earth, to basically clothe the entire planet for almost like 40 years.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, if you take that statistic or something, maybe I'm getting it wrong, but it's something that I read recently that's like these numbers are insane. Mm-hmm. I think the future is also for at least myself, my outlook on it is like wearing more natural fibers. Like I'm a huge fan of merino wool. Awesome. I think that we worked with a lot of merino wool during my time at ByteBorda, like with the Woolmar company and also having it on the platform and mm-hmm. working with clients to develop textiles using merino wool. It's like a magic fabric, man. Like, man, those sheep, those sheep in New Zealand and, in the UK their hairs and their fur are, it's like magical. It like keeps you cool, you cool, like in the summer, but then keeps you warm when it gets wet. It's like, it's absolutely amazing. And it also is less harmful for the environment if you don't wear it anymore, or it then starts to decompose. Like I think it's super interesting. Like, and it's something I'm trying to actually make more conscious decisions when I'm putting clothes like on my body.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, that's very. I have merino wool socks, and I'm a big fan of those.
Yeah,
big fan.
Yeah, the only downside is that the reason why they're always mixed with some sort of nylon or polyester is because it mm-hmm. just makes it a bit more durable. Mm-hmm. And it, you can get a lower cheap point just because like wool is quite scarce and also very expensive as a material. But, right. But yeah, that's a bit about like my outlook on fashion. Yeah. And also what I've been working on at Bipoda for 3.5 years.
Wow. Well, I mean, it sounds like amazing work. That's very, very cool. And that's like the biggest hurdle I've ever had with, I would like to make clothes eventually. But the biggest struggle is I don't want to introduce new fabric into the world when there's so much out there. So it sounds like you're kind of working with people who maybe have the same vision to an extent and how to source it and use it more sustainably.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting about that's great that you want to do that. I think it's really nice. And also it's not actually that I think so humans create to communicate, right? So they like we as humans are there to make, and it's not that we need to, like, the solution is not that we need to stop making, right? Because we as humans, we're always creating new. And if someone like you wants to create clothing, like, I think the idea of what I built at Bipoda Create is like perfect, because you can actually develop your own textile that is not just something that you would buy from a swatch book. Like, you would have the ability to kind of like control the materials, being able to use like on-hand materials. One thing that we built was like being able to optically blend yarns, so you don't have to dye certain yarns to get the color, which then makes it very harmful with chemicals. Like the ability to, like, let's say mix like a red and a blue yarn to get the purple that you would need, instead of having to actually lab dye it purple. But the idea, actually, like what I was helping Bipoda build was like the premise that like you wouldn't need to understand the supply chain or the knitting, and being able to like make choices to get the best possible product out of what you needed. So what are you thinking about? Like what are kind of your ideas? Like what did you want to make?
I don't know. I got no ideas right now. It's always been just like an idea in my head of when I have more time, think about doing that.
You should do it, man. I mean, I think doing things with your hands is like, is the best, you know, like just living in the now, using your hands, like.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Absolutely. But I made a list actually today of called things to do after school. Like once I'm done with my, I'm doing a graduate degree. Once I'm done with that, I'll have so much more free time, and I'll be able to work on like hobbies. And that's one of them on top of the list, is looking into making some sort of clothing.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah. Really nice. You'll have to keep me posted on that. I want to see what you make.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to learn how to sew too. That's going to be part of it. So.
Hey man, YouTube. That's how
yeah,
I learned.
YouTube. Yeah. That mean that's going to be my wealth of knowledge.
Yeah. Nice, man. Yeah, man.
Thank you. Well, I want to say thank you again for coming on the podcast today. I think we had a good talk, man. Very, very informative. Very.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Very anti-car. Hit all the topics that we should have. So thank you for that.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you if they're interested in your cycling or creative endeavors?
Yeah, they can follow me on Instagram. It's Charlie, CHARLIEC, and then my last name, Duong, DUONG. And yeah, they can find me on Instagram.
Beautiful. And what's your dog's Instagram?
Ooh, Life of QB. That's my dog's Instagram. Life, and then QB is KYUBI. Yeah, she needs the follows, man. I think her content is amazing. She makes amazing content.
Yeah. It's good stuff. We need some sponsorship deals for the dog. So everyone get on that.
Yeah, man. No, I think if that can take off, I would be very happy.
Wonderful. All right. Well, again,
appreciate your time, man.
Talk to you later.
See ya.